Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, July the 6th, 2012, and today is the Vegan Athlete Show Part 1. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-hosts, Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
And Alon Cohen.
Hi.
And our control room tech trainee, Tim Aretz.
Hello.
Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today, we have Dr. Andrew Rowan, the president of the Humane Society University, with us. Ever since I recently learned about this newly formed higher learning institution, it's been on the forefront of my attention, and I've been impressed at what the school has to offer and am intrigued to learn more. This is, I believe, the first post-secondary school of its kind that focuses on education that is specifically built with animal advocacy in mind. It offers all sorts of undergraduate, graduate, and continuing education programs that will presumably prepare its students for careers in multiple facets of animal activism disciplines. Where else can you go to a university to partake in multiple courses that concentrate on the human-animal interaction? We will find out more about what HSU has to offer soon on the show. And for our feature interview today, we have with us again Janice Scareco of the Raw Foundation Culinary Arts and Nutrition Institute. In addition to being a natural health educator and raw food chef and instructor, she also wears the hats of being a sports nutritionist and an author, just having released a DVD. Today, being the Vegan Athlete Show Part 1, we have her here to speak with us about raw vegan sports nutrition. We'll learn about the breakdown of carb, fat, and protein components of food and what we require for daily nutrition and sports performance. We'll also learn about hydration and electrolyte needs for the athlete, and Janice will talk about what to eat pre-workout, during exercise, and post-workout for optimal athletic performance and recovery. That interview is coming up in 33 minutes. But before we get to that, I just wanted to talk about a workshop that I took with Janice just about a month ago called Peak Performance Level 2, Unleash the Athlete Within. This was a five-hour course on raw vegan sports nutrition, which we'll encapsulate in the 20 minutes that we have today with Janice on the show. But to tell you more about the course, which I immensely enjoyed and got a lot out of, it was a wonderful afternoon spent with Janice and about eight other students who wanted to learn more about optimizing our athletic performance with the nutrition that we take in, because of course you are what you eat, and food is super important to this equation of keeping a fit body that is able to perform and then recover as efficiently as possible. As we discovered, not only is it non-animal food that is a key component to this, but raw non-animal food, as unprocessed and of course uncooked as possible, is what will lead you to the greatest athletic success. Janice is highly knowledgeable in her field of sports nutrition, and what she says, which you will hear for yourself, just totally makes sense when it comes to consuming the proper foods. Animal protein is acidic to the body and causes inflammation, which slows down body repair after exercise, whereas plant-based foods are alkaline-forming and therefore reduce inflammation and support the quickest and most optimal recovery. And when you're performing in athletic activities and working on your fitness, that is what you want, a high level of performance and quick recovery, and therefore a body with a pH level that is alkaline as opposed to acidic. And in our interview later on the show, she'll get into why it is that raw plant-based foods specifically give you that ultimate advantage. Though it was a five-hour long course, and I found it to go by really fast, and that's when you truly know that you are engaged in the subject matter, which was steadfastly due to the dynamic presentation style of our teacher. She truly does make her classes fun and engaging, and you come out of them feeling totally empowered to take your new knowledge to the next level in your lifestyle. What I also came out with this course was finally the knowledge and more than adequate ability to open up a young Thai coconut, which I've been wanting to do forever. Coconuts are, of course, nature's manna when it comes to a needed elixir of easily absorbable vitamins, minerals, electrolytes, sugars, amino acids, and nutrients. A simply perfect and optimal combination in one when you need to replenish these vital components in your body during and after exercise. And instead of just telling us to go out and open up a coconut after class to dive into this new lifestyle task, she not only showed us all how to do it, but then she had each person in the class open up her own coconut and remove the meat from it, which was incredibly empowering, I must say. And since then, I can say that I have done what I've been wanting to do for a long time now, and that is I've started to buy coconuts that I can now open up myself to get the revitalizing nutrition from. It might sound silly, but that was one of the most valuable parts of the course for me. I am now officially a confident procurer and opener of the coconut. Also very practically valuable from the course was that it largely involved learning how to make our own foods for pre-workout, during workout, and post-workout. From the coconuts that we opened, Janice demonstrated how to make the most delicious and nutritious chocolate coconut smoothie. We also learned how to make a sports jewel out of medjool dates and agave nectar, plus a few other items such as a raw post-workout burger made of garlic, almonds, flaxseed, namashoyu, coconut oil, and chili powder and basil. There was a lot more covered in the course than I have summarized here, including education on stress, adrenal hormones, sugar, caloric needs, and digestion in athletic performance. And I would highly recommend this workshop to anyone who wants to know more about the body's nutritional needs, especially when it comes to fitness and exercise. At the end of this workshop, Janice also graciously gifted us each a copy of her new uncooking DVD called Raw Food to Live For. This was just released recently and is now available on Amazon.com for purchase as well as at Whole Foods stores. As Janice is a natural when it comes to public speaking and dynamic, engaging, and informed presentation, I think it was only a matter of time before this DVD was made, which comprises of a reel of demonstrations of some of her many delicious and healthy recipes that she teaches in her classes. In this DVD, she demonstrates how to make this simple and revitalizing energy elixir that we have posted on our website, as well as almond milk, vanilla goji granola, cheesy kale chips, Italian garden crackers, pasta with marinara, and one bite brownies and chocolate icing. Of course, all of these recipes are vegan and raw, so you will see that the ingredients used are not the typical ones that you're accustomed to making recipes with of similar names. For example, the milk is made with almonds, not dairy. The brownies have no egg in them. The crackers are dehydrated rather than baked in an oven. And the pasta is made with spiralized zucchini rather than with flour and water. When embarking upon such unfamiliar methods of food preparation as this type of raw cuisine is for most of us, video demonstrations such as these presented in such a delightful manner are just the nudge that one may need to transition from unfamiliar to familiar territory, where you are able to see with your own eyes that, yes, blending some spinach, bananas, dates, and spirulina into a blender is actually easy and very doable and not as daunting as it may initially seem. And it's carrying out these step-by-step recipes by virtue of demonstration that can make a world of difference in your health and life, and of course, in the lives of the animals that you are sparing when you choose plant-based foods over eating living creatures. As a visual primer to learning step-by-step, easy and satisfying and delicious raw vegan recipes, I encourage the raw food newbie to check out this DVD. I think that viewing the demonstrations on your own will allow you to become empowered to make changes in your life that encourage and foster the secret ingredients as cited in the DVD's booklet, that is love, passion, and joy. It might sound farcical to say it, but making and eating these foods evokes exactly those emotions because they are foods of vitality where no one has been hurt and, in fact, where everyone thrives. Try it for yourself and you'll see. And now I'd like to talk about the latest in the veg restaurant scene in Vancouver. We have two new vegetarian restaurants that have just opened up in town, Terra V Burger, which I tried out this week, and The Acorn, which Tim and Alyssa, you both went to this week for their unofficial opening night. From what I've read and the pictures that I've seen so far, the food at The Acorn seems to fill a huge gap in the region of high-end vegetarian cuisine that we have lacked here for so long. Tell us about your experiences there this week, Tim and Alyssa.
Yeah, it was really wonderful. Personally, I'm a big fan of cooked food, and they cook it certainly really well. They have a very nice selection for the menu, and it's very well prepared. The execution is just marvelous.
It's a really beautiful space, like high ceilings. Mm-hmm. Everything's done really nice. The dessert, the cacao dessert, I just cannot say enough about that dessert.
I actually have that dessert written down. It's ginger cacao cake, drunken Okanagan cherries, hibiscus sorbet, and candied walnuts. What was that like?
And a brownie, a big, beautiful ginger brownie.
Wow.
And candied ginger. Oh my God. And the sour cherry sauce. It was just so much going on.
A lot of flavor.
Blended so well.
I think.
And the brownie just like melted in your mouth. Yeah. I can't say enough about it. I loved it. There was a long wait, but that was to be expected.
It was their soft opening night, right?
Yeah. So now they gave us a free dessert.
Oh, nice. So they're officially open now, I presume, for business. And what did you guys have for your main courses?
I had a sort of eggplant, roasted pepper, mm-hmm. and wild rice kind of stack.
I have that one written down too.
And then with the curried sliced thinly potatoes. Like the curry was amazing.
Musaman potatoes. I don't even know what that means. Pickled shallots, sea asparagus. What's sea asparagus?
I don't know. No. I think Tim had that.
And mushroom juice. And so what did you have, Tim?
I had the king oyster mushrooms with creamy quinoa. And asparagus as well. It was really, really nice. And also before, as a starter, we had a kale salad, Caesar salad, which was made with,
the kale?
with five different types of kale. That was really
wonderful. There only are five different types of kale in the world, as far as I know. That's incredible that they're all there in one salad. I must have
beautiful.
That one. The Acorn is located at 3995 Main Street, and they do have a website. It's theacornrestaurant.ca. They're on Facebook as well. I very quickly wanted to mention as well that whereas The Acorn fills a need for fancier vegetarian cuisine, I would say that Terra V Burger fills the Vancouver need for exactly the opposite, which is vegetarian and vegan fast food. We have never had that here in Vancouver
we've
before.
We've had Loving Hut.
Oh, this is really fast food. This is like, it's similar to the Loving Hut that burnt down. Didn't really burn down, but it's on Broadway, actually, which is like right in my neighborhood.
Nice.
So I want to try out everything that they have. I was just passing by there the other day and thought, I want a veggie burger. I went there and had their tempeh barbecue burger, which was great. They do have real like dairy cheese, and they have non-dairy daya cheese. They also have sandwiches, wraps, salads, yam fries, smoothies. And as I mentioned, since I live right by there, I am going to give myself the challenge of trying out basically everything on their menu. It all sounds so good. They're located at 2961 West Broadway, and they have a website too. It's terravburger.com, and Terra is spelled with 1R, and they're on Facebook as well. Alyssa.
You're listening to Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM CFRO, Vancouver's cooperative radio in Vancouver, Canada. And I have a few events for you. This weekend, going on actually right as we speak, is a book sale fundraiser at Fairy Cakes. That's the vegan cupcake store at 3586 Fraser Street. I think that's at East 20th. I'm pretty sure. Around there. 11 to 7 today. Oh, no. It's not today. I keep thinking it's Saturday. It's totally Friday. So it's actually
Saturday
tomorrow.
Saturday and Sunday.
Totally forgot. Okay. 11 to 7, Saturday and Sunday, book fundraiser. You can bring books and go pick up books. They're still accepting books to support the BC's Small Animal Rescue. And that all proceeds go to them. So something to check out this weekend. Coming up next week on Monday, Richmond City Council, there will be a presentation about banning shark fins. And Richmond is the place where more shark fins are for sale than anywhere else in Canada. So Anthony Marr and Vancouver Animal Defense League are having a rally there. And before they present to the City Hall. That's Monday, July 9th, 6 p.m. at Richmond City Hall on Number 3 Road. The same presentation and rally occurred at Burnaby City Council last Monday, and immediately Councillor Dhaliwal proposed a motion to have it banned. But the Richmond event is something that we've all been waiting for. So 6 p.m. is when it starts, and they enter the building just before 7. Another event around banning shark fins is a demonstration at Vancouver City Hall. That's the following week, Wednesday, July 18th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So sort of a noon hour rally there for the media. So it's really important that, you know, our numbers are large and we make a good show.
I have high hopes for this all. Yes. Like, especially like Richmond is such a major player, I would say, in this industry, because there's such a large Chinese community there.
Yeah.
I feel like they are going to ban it, just because I feel like there would be the pressure there and encouragement to follow in the footsteps of the other. Like, how can one community not, that is all within Metro Vancouver, not cooperate when all the other ones are, right? So I think it's going to happen.
Awesome. Yeah, hopefully. So we are going to show up Wednesday, July 18th at Vancouver City Hall for a demo there. Posters are welcome. They have posters also if you don't have them. And that's exciting. And then another event that's coming up at the end of July that I'm quite excited about, because I love films for advocacy for animals and just art to get the message across. So there's a movie night actually at Rhizome Cafe. It's Thursday, July 26th at 7 p.m. It's called the Total Liberation Movie Night. And the film that we'll be showing is If a Tree Falls, a Story of the Earth Liberation Front. And the evening will feature a guest speaker, lots of free donation zines and literature, and grab bags for all that attend. Entry is by donation. No one will be turned away for lack of funds. They encourage people to come hungry and eat some of Rhizome's delicious vegan munchies. They have a delicious orange cake that I love, and their miso bowl is outstanding.
Is Robin putting on that event, who's sometimes on the show?
It's not by Robin, it's being put on by the Black Paw Print Collective. It's a new collective that's starting up in Vancouver. I don't know much about them, but I know that they're a new animal rights collective that's starting up in response to some of the sexism that that people have been seeing in other animal rights organizations in Vancouver. So they kind of want to start a very intersectional approach. And that's what I've heard, but this is kind of their coming out party.
Yeah, they say anarchist feminist collective devoted to total animal, environmental, and human liberation through direct action and education. So I have not heard of that movie about the Earth Liberation Front. I'm excited about that.
It's actually the first time it's being screened in Western Canada, I believe.
Awesome.
So it's actually something of an event in and of itself.
That is very exciting. I will definitely be there and hope to see you there too. And finally, I just wanted to mention Vancouver's own Veg Fest. It's Saturday, August 4th, 11 a.m. until probably 6 or 7. It's right downtown Granville Street at Georgia. We'll be taking over the street. Lots of volunteers are needed, people to have booths and spread the word to passersby. So, and just to celebrate and party. So information is at vegfestvancouver.com, and that's where you can get find the contact info for the organizer.
So thank you for that, Alyssa. Today's first interview is with Dr. Andrew Rowan. He is the president of a newly formed private nonprofit institution of higher learning called Humane Society University. It is based in the U.S. and founded by the Humane Society of the United States. The programs that the school offers focus on human and animal interactions. He is here to speak with us today about this newly formed university and the programs that it has for those who wish to study discipline in the post-secondary realm that may prepare oneself for helping the animals. Hello, Dr. Rowan, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
So thank you for coming on the show today. I only just recently found out about HSU and thought, wow, if I were to go back to school one day, this is what I'd want to pursue. As far as I know, your institution is fairly new and probably the first of its kind in the subject matter that you specialize in teaching. I'd like to know why Humane Society University was formed, and could you please tell us what the mandate of the university is?
Well, I've been involved in higher education programs on the animal issues for many years, and I started the first graduate degree program at Tufts University back in 1995. I rejoined the Humane Society in 1997 and have been continuing to sort of focus on higher education issues. That's been part of my job mandate here. And so I was talking with a colleague who was in workforce training, and he and I were sort of noodling around. We both said, why don't we start a university, online university? The online technology was developing. We could see the potential. Places like Phoenix and Strayer were sort of beginning to sort of expand at a rate of knots. And so we thought that, you know, this would be an interesting opportunity to provide leadership training, to provide subject matter skills and expertise, and help the animal movement, frankly, just sort of build capacity in a general, sort of across the board.
What would you say makes Humane Society University different than other post-secondary schools?
Well, we're an almost entirely online, virtual. So we do have classes here in the District of Columbia where we're certified to grant the degrees. But the key feature of HSU is that we don't provide the first 2 years of college education, those sort of general educational years. We'll provide the second 2 years. You need 60 credits in order to gain admission to the university. And we will then, if you do that, we can then provide you with, give you a Bachelor of Science degree in one of the schools or departments that we have. We can also, we also provide graduate certificates and also a master's degree. The District of Columbia Education Commission approved our master's program last year.
So as well as offering these undergraduate and graduate degrees, you also offer a variety of courses in the School of Continuing Education. And just from out of all the courses in general, for example, I took a look at the HSU website, and in the undergrad degree section, I see you have courses such as Animal Protection as a Social Movement, Animals Advocacy and Corporate Change, Farm Animal Welfare, Understanding the Human-Animal Bond, and Sociology of Animal Abuse. This is just a very small sampling of a plethora of courses in various animal studies that you have to offer. Can you please tell us more about what the full-time programs involve as well as the continuing education courses?
Well, the full-time programs are degree courses. So if you continue to take all of the courses necessary to complete the degree program, you will end up with a degree. We, in fact, had our first undergraduate graduation ceremony last year. But it's not easy. Most people are at work and take the courses, online in their quote-unquote free time. And one of the things that we're discovering is that the students are finding that it is a tough slog to take an 8-week course as well as working at the same time. And so some students tried to do two or maybe three courses in a term and just couldn't manage that. We generally are encouraging people to take maybe one course a term. The undergraduate degree will require 60 credits, of which I think about 9 credits will be a sort of project term paper type process. And then we're the graduate degree, the master's degree, you need to have an undergraduate degree with adequate grades in order to get into that, and that's a 36-credit program.
I'm curious if you could just give us more examples of the different types of courses of what people might expect to be able to study. I guess if they're going for the undergraduate degree as well, is there a time limit as if you're doing it part-time as to when you need to complete the degree, or is it fairly liberal?
It's fairly liberal. I mean, we're learning as we go ahead with this institution. We're discovering ways of improving the delivery. We're discovering ways of improving the product, and also learning just how much time and how much effort people have to put into achieving the program. And so, basically, some of the other courses would be I teach a course on global animal issues. I'm also the head of our international division. And so we talk about what the global animal protection movement looks like, how it's growing, and then things like farm animals, wildlife issues, specifically International Whaling Commission and CITES-type issues. I do a bit on the animal research issue, which looks at different requirements in different countries on what is required for animal research and animal testing. So, you know, it's an attempt to provide people with a set of knowledge and a set of skills. And the one thing that that is unique to HSU, in fact, we're pretty unique as it is. There are very few last 2-year universities. The National Labor College has a similar setup. But the one thing that's, as far as I can tell, is unique in the world is that we're the only place that will give you a degree in animal advocacy or in any advocacy type program.
That's the next degree I want. That's just amazing. Other than myself, who else should enroll in these courses at HSU? I'm curious to know who is the school intended for and what can students of the school expect to come out with after taking one of the programs at HSU? Where can they go in their careers and life paths after obtaining a degree or certificate from the school?
Well, if I may go back to my experience at Tufts University, where I set up the Center for the Master's Degree in Animals and Public Policy, people who applied for that degree were told by me that they shouldn't expect that to lead on into sort of workforce opportunities, career opportunities. If they were doing it because something they really wanted to do. And we had a number of people. A veterinarian, for example, came back and did the master's degree, and they went back and started up a cat practice in California and now has 2 cat practices in California, doing very well for herself. But she really just wanted to take the program because she wanted to have a better grasp and understanding of animal welfare, advocacy, and the like. And so that would be one type of individual. But what we found is that about half of the graduates of the Tufts program, which is still going, end up working in the animal protection movement. We have, I think, something like 10 or 12 of them within the Humane Society itself working in various positions. So doing this type of degree is going to give you additional expertise, additional knowledge if you want to work in the animal movement. If you mm-hmm. want to stay where you are and simply want to volunteer, we hope that this will provide you with improved volunteer skills and make you a better advocate.
And definitely, I think if you're already working in the movement, whether you're getting paid or not, what, you know, like we're doing here, is if you want to further your knowledge and skills, I would think this would be the place to go. I understand, as you said, the school is mostly online-based, that is distance education, which presumably means that people from all over the world can take the programs offered by HSU. So what are the eligibility requirements to apply to the university?
Well, if you're an undergraduate, you want to take the undergraduate programs, then you need to have those 60 credits. And generally speaking, we are looking for a C or C plus average.
Is that in the Faculty of Science specifically, or can you have arts as well?
In arts as well. Okay. There are no subject matter requirements.
Okay.
We do have some courses in quantitative and qualitative methods, but we don't require you to have two courses of mathematics or one course of biochemistry or whatever. We're relatively eclectic in what we'll accept in this regard, because all of our programs are focused on animal issues of one sort or another, or advocacy, or if you take the Humane Leadership Program track, then it would be management, nonprofit management.
And what about the continuing education? What are the requirements specifically to just take those courses? I would think that would be not as regimented as the degree programs.
It is not. The School of Continuing Education basically offers a variety of different options. And one of the things that we're hoping to build up is what we're calling the self-paced courses, which will be a lecture, some reading, and then a test, which is you take by yourself. There's no sort of faculty, a mentor in that arena. But what we hope this will do is provide people with a taste of education. We'll provide people with an opportunity to say, well, Am I interested? Can I do it? Would I like to do it? You know, is there enough here that can sort of move me forward? And help them sort of perhaps at some point or another graduate into a full degree program using these types of courses in part as credit for entering the degree programs. But the School of Continuing Education, we have workshops. We have some compassion fatigue workshops for shelter workers. We have workshops on human resources, on sort of basic sort of animal care approaches and things of that nature. And we're slowly building up the set of things. We have a specialist program where you can become a specialist in different areas. One of them is humane education, a field that is vastly underappreciated, unfortunately, in much of the animal movement. There's very little money spent formally on humane education, and it's something we'd like to improve and sort of professionalize as we move forward.
Well, it all sounds very innovative. Thank you for being on the show with us today, Dr. Rowan, to speak with us about Humane Society University. For more information on HSU and the programs that it offers, please visit the website www.humanesocietyuniversity.org.
Thank you very much.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish Territories, Canada. And here are your headlines for July 6, 2010. The mayor of Bogota, Colombia, Gustavo Petro, has shown his support for the banning of bullfighting in the region by starting the process of closing the city's bull ring. Petro indicated that he is keen to change the use of the city's bull ring, La Santa Maria, and instead use the arena for educational and artistic activities. Last January, he also announced no funding for the 2012 bullfighting season. The official statement by the government announcing the termination of the contract signed with the bullfighting corporation says, "Bullfights are linked to activities which can be considered torture, inflicting pain and violence on the animals and causing them to die. The policy in Bogota is to protect animals from cruel treatments. According to previous surveys, most people in Bogota support an end to bullfighting as it is considered an act of cruelty."
Yeah, I actually reported on that a couple weeks ago, I think. And what I love about it is repurposing these venues for educational purposes, cultural events. I think now they're going to be hosting poets and writers in the old bullfighting ring there. And I think I think they had asked, or the government had asked the corporation, the bullfighting corporation, to stop the cruelty or something, or limit it or something. Like, they could continue if they, like, limited
just
the cruelty.
Just limit it a little, just reduce it a touch.
Use doll knives or something. I don't know what that even means.
Yeah, but
better than nothing.
I'm definitely glad it's not going to be reappropriated, you know, under some sort of corporate scheme. And it's, I mean, of course, the fact that it's going to be allowed for artists and educators to take over that space is something fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's really inspiring, and I want to see all slaughterhouses become, I don't know, schools for art or something.
Definitely. So the next story is that a group of a dozen grade 7 students have protested the Shrine Circus at Waterloo, Ontario. The group rallied against the use of animals for entertainment, saying that the animals deserve better than being stuffed in cages. They live in their own filth. Their spirits are broken. It's just very unfair for the animals. We've contacted the city of Waterloo and the region of Waterloo because we want to propose a bylaw against animal circuses, said one of the organizers. The trio of 13-year-old students at St. Nicholas Catholic School gained inspiration during an assignment in history class to reach an issue or problem and make a petition stating what they could do that would change the issue. Waterloo County Shrine Club Chairman Henning Groom responded by saying, "I think the animals are treated much better than if they were out in the wilderness. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and if you ever watch any of the nature shows that are on television dealing with animals out on safari in the wilderness."
Who said that? Who was saying this?
This is the chairman, Henning Groom, who's of the circus, essentially.
Oh, of course he's going to say that.
So while the organizers of the protesters are aware that the Humane Society inspects the circuses wherever they travel, they say it does not change their opinion of the circus in and of itself as like a valuable tool, such that animals should not be used for entertainment, whether or not they're treated well or not treated well. And they've actually been in contact with the Waterloo Regional Police Services and were encouraged by the response they got. And at this point in the story, you know, my heart kind of goes down a bit, because apparently the police told them as long as they did not break any existing laws, such as vandalism or harassment, they were free to protest. But of course, you know, the fact that it shows a kind of a marked distinction, the fact that these 13-year-olds feel that they have the need to go to the police and actually ask them if this is okay, shows something very much within security culture that we're living in.
Right, especially at such a young age.
Exactly.
Actually, probably they were told to do that. They're only 13.
But of course, it's also very significant that the way the schools have been shifting as well. I mean, they told them to make a petition, and of course, they went further and they said, you know, forget a petition, we're going to go do a protest. And that's fantastic. And I think that's kind of the thing that needs to be more advocated. Mm-hmm. Civil disobedience in schools and things.
Absolutely. Such as that. Kudos to that teacher who kind of spearheaded that. Everyone should learn that.
Well, thank you for the headlines, Elon. Today's feature interview is with Janice Goreko, who is the founder of the Raw Foundation Culinary Arts Nutrition Institute, the Raw Food Education Experts, located in Vancouver and Sweden. Janice is a well-respected natural health educator, author, sports nutritionist, raw food chef, coach, and instructor. She is devoted to educating on the benefits of a plant-based diet and is here today to speak with us on the ins and outs of raw vegan sports nutrition. Hello, Janice, and welcome back to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Thank you, Allison. It's wonderful to be here.
So we have you here today to speak on a topic that is not just about plant-based nutrition for athletic performance, but specifically on raw plant-based nutrition, which is your specialty. So even adhering to a regular vegan, that is cooked vegan diet for optimal athletic health and performance, may seem fringe enough for most people these days, although it is starting to get more and more popular as we see amazing vegan athletes being featured in the mainstream media. But for the most part, plant-based athletes are very few and far between still, and then even more so raw plant-based athletes, I would think. So can you share with us your position as to why someone would want to adhere to a raw vegan diet for optimal athletic performance as opposed to a standard omnivorous cooked diet or even a vegan cooked diet? What are the benefits over these two more standard ways of eating? And perhaps you can start by actually defining the word raw or living foods, as they are called, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar with these terms.
Yes, thank you. This is excellent. So we'll start off by defining raw foods. So raw foods are foods that have not been heated over 118 degrees Fahrenheit. And the reason for this is to maintain its life force, the digestive enzymes. You can read more about that. Dr. Howell did a lot of research around the enzymes, the living energies in the foods. And also to keep intact the vitamins, minerals, the phytonutrients, and the proteins.
Okay, and do you advocate eating completely raw, or how about like 70 to 90% raw for optimal performance?
So I really want us to focus on, you know, how we feel as people. When we say things like, when you say you feel cooked, how do you feel? Or when you say you feel fried or alive, how does that feel?
So, and when I feel raw, I feel the opposite, right?
Right, exactly. So if you take things back to their raw state or their basic state, their most pure state, like how do you feel about that? So it's a different experience. So I guess I'd like to touch a bit on the cooked foods. We lose, if we're talking about particularly for sports performance, we lose 50% of the bioavailable protein, up to 70 to 90% of the vitamins and the minerals. Mm-hmm. So it's all about alkalizing foods and the energy. We are what we eat. So if we eat foods with a lot of life force energy, we too will become full of energy. The digestion of cooked foods is much slower and much more difficult. Again, focusing on how we feel. If we eat an avocado, our body knows exactly what to do with that, whereas if we eat a burger, our body is pretty confused and it takes a long time to break it all down. and move through actually takes 3 days. And during those 3 days, it's taking the energy from the body. So it always depends. I always say to people, I want you to be on the smart and the feel-good plan. If it feels good to you, that is the smart plan. That's the intelligent choice. Your body is always using a portion of its energy for digestion, and then the rest of it can go to performance. And it's up to you by considering the diet, the amount of cooked foods that you're putting into the body, how much of the energy you would like to allocate to digestion and how much you would like to allocate to performance.
Well, as you said, you are what you eat. So I think we'll both agree that proper nutrition is vital not only for good health, but for peak athletic performance. Can you talk to us about the carb, protein, and fat components that food are made up of and what our daily requirements are for both sedentary and athletic lifestyles?
Sure. So the carbs, proteins, and the fats, I like to follow the 80-10-10, and 80% being carbohydrates, 10% protein, and 10% fats. And that is your average over the year. And we take a look at daily requirements calorically. Say for 125-pound female, it would be, you multiply this number by 100, you'll get 1250 as your baseline. And then you can double that number for a very active person. So that would be calorically. What I want to focus on also is that it's the quality of the calories or the quality of the foods that we're eating, because certainly a bowl of, you've heard in my class, I say pasta, because flour and water essentially is paste. It's a completely different components that we, or calories that we'd be putting into the body versus having a garden summer pasta, if you will, which would be zucchinis and tomatoes and olive oils and garlic and all the fresh herbs. Like, these calories are powerful, life-giving calories. So not all calories, I'd say, would be created equal. There's a lot of obsession around protein and good sources of proteins, and I think we really need to not be obsessed with anything. If we're going to focus on something, it's the whole package. Where are we getting our calories from? What kind of foods are we choosing to bring into our body? So that's really important. The fats are really low, so the 10% is low, and that is the slowest digesting food. So that's taking the most amount of energy away from us. And also, the fats are taking up valuable oxygen carrying capacity. So in the bloodstream, fats are going to take up a portion of the bloodstream where we could normally be carrying a larger amount of oxygen if we had a lower fat diet. So that's important for athletic performance as well.
So keeping in mind what you've just said, what types of foods in general should we consume to meet our nutritional requirements and to excel in athletic performance? And for example, regarding protein, because that's really big for athletes, what do you say to people who ask, but where do you get your protein from? What foods is protein found in? And on a raw vegan diet, what should an athlete eat to get enough protein?
Right, excellent. So it's all about the quality of the protein again. So we want to focus on, and I guess the knowledge is around what is the content of the foods. We can take a look at great resources like fitbay.com or nutritiondata.com and find out the compositions, protein-wise, the percentage of different foods. So tomatoes are 12%, or lettuce is 22% protein, kale is 12%. Bananas are 4%, apricots are 10%. So every single food contains protein. It's the quality of the protein. Some people think that animal protein is a higher quality of protein, possibly. They really would like to shed some insight into that. The body cannot use the protein in that original form. It cannot assimilate it. It needs to be broken down into the amino acids, and that's where the value is. The value lies in its amino acid composition. So we eat a plant-based diet, or we enjoy some of the foods that I mentioned, and we get the amino acids right away, which without having to really break them down, and we can process it right away. As far as complete proteins is something else that comes up typically. The complete protein is actually a complete myth in the way that we don't need to have them all at once, all of the components. Sure, we do need them in our diet and, you know, over the week, not even in the same day. So Frances Moore Lappe, she's a wonderful woman who came up with a theory, but she retracted her statement over 20 years ago, and she said, I was utterly and completely mistaken. We do need these amino acids, but we don't need them all at one time. So I think it's fascinating that the information that we're learning or that is out there is not totally the whole picture. So we need to continue to uncover and dig deeper. Our body has an amino acid pool, so it's constantly recycling the proteins through the body, and it's able to also produce proteins and then break it down into amino acids. So this is how we're able to create that complete protein. I mean, after all, we don't see the animals, you know, combining their beans and rice and things like this, eating complete proteins, but they're powerful and strong. We look at gorillas and elephants and, I mean.
And lots of people, too.
Right,
all those great
exactly.
vegan athletes. Can you tell us about water and its role in fueling the body, especially when it comes to athletic activities? For example, dehydration and electrolyte depletion can always be concerns during serious, high-intensive workouts.
Sure. So it's really important to consume water that is full of electrolytes. So you have sodium, potassium, phosphorus, magnesium. These are all important components. So it starts with defining what those are first, and then electrolytes would be a water, sugar, salt combination. And, you know, for me, what's the most important one to focus on wouldn't be Gatorade, right?
Right.
So, Gatorade, I mean, we all, not all, but
I don't trust drinking anything that's bright blue in color. It's just, it doesn't seem right. Just doesn't seem natural.
No, it doesn't seem natural. When you read the ingredients, though, if you're an entry-level person coming in and sports with a little bit of a sports nutrition background, you read the ingredients, you see something that says monopotassium phosphate, you might feel excited because you see potassium and phosphate and, well, mono, that sounds fine. It's single. Okay, I get it. And get excited thinking that it is something beneficial. But that ingredient in itself is used in fertilizers and fungicides. It's a buffering agent, and its most common use is in Gatorade and in cigarettes. So this is not where you're going to get your potassium from or your electrolytes from. The Gatorade also contains brominated vegetable oil. So I've done a lot of research on bromine, and that creates halogens in the body, which attach to your thyroid, so you're not able to uptake iodine. And this is a huge concern. So anyway, we're moving away from the Gatorade and these ingredients particularly. It's not, you know, a brand-specific challenge, but it's these ingredients that are really damaging to our body. So
what's the best electrolyte liquid to take in to replenish yourself during workouts?
The best, absolute best liquid to replenish your electrolytes would be something that is closest to human blood plasma. It's a combination of easily absorbed vitamins, minerals, electrolytes, sugars, amino acids, and nutrients. And originally, it looks like a large green football, and it's a young Thai coconut water. So
that's awesome. And I think coconut water, I think people are starting to realize that coconut water is what you should drink. It's becoming more and more, I guess the big marketing corporations are starting to realize that, because you're seeing so many brands of bottled coconut water in the stores. But I know you advocate just going out and buying your own coconuts, which is actually the best source, I would think, is straight from the actual coconut. And we have them here available in Vancouver, in other cities too, I hope. So, that's awesome. And that's a great practical tip that I took from your workshop that I took weeks ago. And just curious, how much water do we lose while intensively exercising?
We can lose 2 liters plus per hour.
Okay. So yeah. I would imagine it's important to replenish that on, I guess, would it be for every 2 liters you're losing per hour, you should replenish with 2 liters, or how does that work?
You won't be able to, probably in 2 hours.
I know
if
I
you
don't.
Drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be really challenging. Your actual maximum absorption would be 800 mils per hour, so it's under a liter. So you can lose a lot more than you gain. So that's why it's super important to drink water that is high in electrolytes. If we drink tap water or water that doesn't have electrolytes, we are further diluting the electrolytes in our body, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And with that comes some serious consequences. So with electrolytes, they're a medium chain for all the chemical and electrical reactions, and even a slight variation, it throws things off. It's like the yin and the yang, that's the potassium and the sodium. So they're sending communications through the nerve cells, and it's an electricity, you know, basically that goes through. And when we are losing electrolytes, it become depleted, we get things like headaches and muscle weakness, we have low energy, tingling, numbness in our fingers, low reflexes, which is not what you want when you're in the middle of a race, nausea, vomiting, abdominal cramping, just really basically you don't feel well. You may lose your control of your bodily functions, and this is a terrible situation, but we've seen it happen, you know, with many high-performance athletes, and it's often due to, you know, this type of situation where the electrolytes are just so far depleted.
So I want to talk about food, pre-exercise and during exercise. What do you recommend that a person consumes to get prepared for their workout or race, and also while they are exercising?
Thank you. Yes. So before their workout, it's nice to consume something that is light and easy to digest. It's not often fun to go and try and work out when you have a full stomach or something really sitting in your stomach. So I like to enjoy an energy elixir. So that we did in the class. Or
And we have a video to that on our website too, which is perfect that you said that, because it's the demo of you showing how to make this super easy and amazing drink, which I have pretty much every day.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Yeah, that is an energy elixir. And quickly, I guess, an energy elixir, it may say in the video or not, but that energy elixir has 27 grams of protein. So when people ask me where I get my protein, that's where
there
I get my protein from.
Yeah.
And then, so consuming something, I guess, liquidy is important. And then during, as you're getting prepared, if it is going to be an activity where you need energy just for 30 minutes or an hour, you really want to stay light on the fat content, because it's going to be moving much faster into your cells. So I don't know about you, but me, first thing in the morning, if I'm going to go to the beach or the gym, I want energy. So I keep the fat out of my energy elixir. So no like coconut meat and oils. It's just really simple. And then I feel that energy and I'm propelled into action. When we put the fats in, we'll be a little bit slower. We'll have a longer stamina, of course, because it's digesting slower. So maybe we're going to go for a longer hike for 3 hours than we could put the fats in. So if that makes sense.
Yeah. And after workouts, post-workout, what should a person eat? What are the best foods to consume after exercise and why?
Okay, so this is really important. After a workout, there is a 45-minute window, really, where carbs are consumed. They're absorbed the fastest, resulting in a fast recovery. So having something green and alkalizing is really important as well. If we do this, the recovery time is going to greatly decrease. You're not going to have the same kind of stiffness that you have if you don't consume something green. So 45-minute window. The highest source is if you have a juicer and you're going to juice something green, wow, that provides an infusion of easily assimilated amino acids for the body as well. Within 30 minutes, the key is to rehydrate. I mean, we've listed what happens when we're not properly hydrated in the body, so we really want to focus on that and just keep it really simple. And
what about taking in protein after like high intensive weight workout?
Sure. So we do the proteins, the amino acids are coming in the form of greens. So we are getting a lot of proteins in the greens, and that's perfectly fine as well.
Oh, that's good to know. So you offer a workshop series in peak athletic performance, one of which I was able to attend recently, as I had mentioned. If people want to learn more about what we've been talking about today, how can they connect with you to participate in these workshops in the future, and even, say, just in your regular food workshops where you're showing people how to prepare these amazing, wonderful raw foods?
Thank you. So people can visit our website, which is rawfoundation.ca. We have a great Facebook page, which is at Raw Foundation, and we post up recipes and inspirational words and tools and tips to really catapult everyone into action and have them rebooting their life to having the most peak performance. And they can call our office as well, so all our contact information will be listed again on the website, rawfoundation.ca.
And I understand you do coaching as well?
Yeah, so we work with a lot of high-performance athletes and actors and people who are looking to unleash their athlete within. We do a powerful coaching package, and it can be designed specifically to the needs of our clients. So I'd like to offer a free strategy session or complimentary strategy session to any of your listeners.
That's great. Thank you. So they just mentioned that they heard it on the Animal Voices show, and that's awesome. Thanks, Janice.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks so much for being on the show with us today, Janice, to talk to us about raw vegan sports nutrition. For more information on the work that Janice does at the Raw Foundation Culinary Arts Institute, please do visit www.rawfoundation.ca.
That wraps up another Animal Voices show. Today we heard some excellent reviews and interviews. If you want to listen again or share the show with your friends, please do visit our website, animalvoices.org. That's where we upload all our shows with links and videos on our blog. Next week, Allison will be featuring an interview with vegan ultra marathoner Rich Roll about
his new book. Very excited about that. It's the Vegan Athlete Show Part 2, by the way.
Awesome. And in addition, next week, I'm going to present a segment on where animal rights fits in with spiritual practice. Want to keep in touch with Animal Voices? We welcome you to join our Facebook group, Animal Voices Vancouver. Follow us on Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. If you'd like to send us a love letter or perhaps some constructive criticism, please drop us a line at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. In case you forgot, we broadcast live on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 in Vancouver, Canada, and streaming live from coopradio.org. We invite you to become a member of Co-op Radio. Doing so helps keep us on the air and supports the important work we do speaking out for animals and promoting the compassionate lifestyle. Please do stay tuned to this station for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. We'll leave you with a song called Alone from Moby's Animal Rights album.